Zen, Zest, Zip, Zap, and Zing. Number 14. An Osho talk, given spontaneously at an outdoor meeting to an international audience of thousands of people.
The first question. Does not a child have as much right to privacy and freedom from parental conditioning as the parents themselves expect? It is one of the most fundamental problems facing humanity today. The future depends how we solve this problem. It has never been encountered before. For the first time, man has come of age. A certain maturity has happened. And as you become mature, you have to face new problems. Slowly, slowly, as man progressed, he became aware of many kinds of slaveries. In the days of Rama, who is being worshipped in India as one of the greatest incarnations of God, people were sold in the markets just like commodity. Particularly women. Men was not yet aware what he is doing to other men, selling, purchasing people in the marketplace just like any other thing. And the days of Rama are thought to be the golden days of India's history. They were the blackest days possible, ugliest possible. Even Mahatma Gandhi used to think that we have to bring the kingdom of Rama back. I'm surprised at the enormous ignorance the days of Rama, his kingdom, was as primitive as one can imagine. Rama himself does not seem to be very religious, spiritual. What to say about his being an incarnation of God? He poured melted lead into one untouchable's ears because he has heard the holy scriptures, the Vedas, which were prohibited to the poorest part of the society. The Vedas were not allowed to be read by the untouchables, which constitute almost one half of India. And women were not allowed either. It was a simple strategy. If you want to keep millions of people in slavery, let them remain as much uneducated as possible. If you educate them, they start thinking themselves as human beings, equal to others. The more they become educated, the more they demand equality, freedom. The best way to prevent is not to educate them. The education makes so much difference that only Brahmins and the Kshatriyas, the priests and the warriors, were educated. And the others were not educated. Naturally, the gap was big between the two. And the uneducated could not conceive himself equal to the educated. He was ready to be a slave. He accepted it as his fate. And the women were not allowed to read the Vedas either. They were also thought in terms of commodity. It was very easy to purchase women. Even Krishna, whom India worships as the most perfect incarnation of God, had 16,000 wives. Now this is the ugliest thing one can conceive of. And all these wives were not married to him. Many were others' wives which he had forcibly taken away. He had the power. He had the army. He could manage, he could purchase, he could steal, he could force people to give their beautiful wives to him. And still, he was thought to be the most perfect incarnation of God. These women are taken away from others as if they are property. Just as you can conquer somebody's property, land, somebody's kingdom, you can snatch away his wife. It is just property. Nothing much. No need to bother about the woman. And still no rebellion arose. Man was in a very primitive, ignorant, unintelligent state. Slowly that kind of slavery disappears. The woman in India still remains a slave. But in the West, the woman is getting out of the bondage. Only recently in the West, we have become aware that the greatest slavery is of the child. It was never thought before. It is not mentioned in any scripture of the world. Who could have thought a child and a slave to his own parents who love him, who sacrifice themselves for the child. It would have looked ridiculous, utter nonsense. But now, as psychological insight has deepened into human mind and its functionings, it has become absolutely clear that the child is the most exploited. Nobody has been exploited more than the child. And of course he is being exploited behind a facade of love. And I don't say that the parents are aware that they are exploiting the child, that they are imposing a slavery on the child, that they are destroying the child, that they are making him stupid, unintelligent, that their whole effort of conditioning the child as a Hindu, as a Mohammedan, as a Christian, as a Jaina, as a Buddhist is inhuman. They are not aware of it, but that does not make any difference as far as the facticity is concerned. The child is being conditioned by the parents in ugly ways. And of course the child is helpless. He depends on the parents. He cannot rebel. He cannot escape. He cannot protect himself. He is absolutely vulnerable. Hence he can be easily exploited. The parental conditioning is the greatest slavery in the world. It has to be completely uprooted. Only then man will be able for the first time to be really free, truly free, authentically free. Because the child is the father of man. If the child is brought up in a wrong way, then the whole humanity goes wrong. The child is the seed. If the seed itself is poisoned and corrupted by good intentioned people, well-wishing people, then there is no hope for a free human individual. Then that dream can never be fulfilled. What you think you have is not individuality. It is only personality. It is something cultivated upon you, upon your nature, by your parents, the society, the priest, the politician, the educationists. The educationists from the KG to the university is in the service of the vested interests. It is in the service of the establishment. Its whole purpose is to destroy every child in such a way, cripple every child in such a way that he adjusts with the established society. There is a fear. The fear is that if a child is left from the very beginning unconditioned, he will be so intelligent. He will be so alert, aware, that his whole life style will be of rebellion. and nobody wants rebels. Everybody wants obedient people. Parents love the obedient child. And remember, the obedient child is almost always the most stupid child. The rebellious child is the intelligent one, but he is not respected or loved. The teachers don't love. The society does not give him respect. He is condemned. Either he has to compromise with the society, otherwise he has to live in a kind of self-guilt. Naturally he feels that he has been not good to his parents. He has not made them happy. Remember perfectly well, the parents of Jesus were not happy with Jesus. The parents of Gautam the Buddha were not happy with Gautam the Buddha. These people were so intelligent, so rebellious. How the parents can be happy with them? And each child is born with such great possibilities and potential that if he is allowed and helped to grow, his individuality without any hindrance from others, we will have a beautiful world. We will have many Buddhas and many Socrateses and many Jesuses. We will have a tremendous variety of geniuses. The genius happens very rarely, not because that the genius is born rarely. No. The genius happens rarely because it is very difficult to escape from the conditioning process of the society. Only once in a while, somehow, a child manages to escape from the clutches. Just the other day I was saying to Tom Cassidy that please open your envelope. Ajit Saraswati has sent me a note about it. He says, Bhagwan, I have found that the word develop means exactly the same thing. That is opening the envelope. Velop means a veil, a cover. Develop means removing the veil, uncovering it. Envelop means putting the veil on, covering it. Every child is being enveloped by the parents, by the society, by the teachers, by the priests, by all the vested interests. Enveloped with many layers of conditioning. He is given a certain religious ideology. He is forced to become a Jew or a Christian or a Hindu or a Mohammedan. It is not his choice. And whenever somebody is forced without his choice, you are crippling the person. You are destroying his intelligence. You are not giving him a chance to choose. You are not allowing him to function intelligently. You are managing in such a way that he will function only mechanically. He will be a Christian, but he is not Christian by his choice. And what does it mean to be a Christian if it is not your choice? The few people who followed Jesus, who went with him were courageous people. They were the only Christians. They risked their life. They went against the current. They lived dangerously. They were ready to die. But they were not ready to compromise. The few people who went with Gautam Buddha were really Buddhists. But now, there are millions of Christians around the world and millions of Buddhists around the world, and they are all bogus. They are pseudo. They are bound to be pseudo. It is forced on them. They are enveloped in a certain religious ideology. Then they are enveloped in a certain political ideology. They are told that they are Indians, that they are Iranians, that they are Chinese, that they are Germans. A certain nationality is imposed on them. And humanity is one. The earth is one. But the politicians won't like it to be one. Because if the earth is one, then the politicians, with all their politics, will have to disappear. Then where all these presidents and prime ministers will go? They can exist only if the world remains divided. Religion is one. But then what will happen to the Polak Pope? To all the stupid Shankaracharyas? To Ayatollah Khomeiniak? What will happen to all these people? They can exist only if there are many religions, many churches, many cults, many creeds. There are 300 religions on the earth, and at least 3,000 sects of these religions. Then of course there is a possibility for many priests, bishops, archbishops, high priests, Shankaracharyas, this possibility will disappear. And I tell you, religiousness is one. It has nothing to do with any Bible, any Veda, any Gita. It has to do something with a loving heart, with an intelligent being. It has something to do with awareness, meditativeness. But all the wasted interests will suffer. Hence, parents who belong to a certain establishment, a certain nation, a certain church, a certain denomination are bound to force their ideas on the children. And the strange thing is that the children are always more intelligent than the parents. Because the parents belong to the past and the children belong to the future. The parents are already conditioned, enveloped, covered. Their mirrors are covered with so much dust that they don't reflect anything. They are blind. Only a blind man can be a Hindu or a Mohammedan or a Jaina or a Christian. A man with eyes is simply religious. He does not go to the church or to the temple or to the mosque. He will not worship all kinds of stupid images. There are people in India who are worshipping the monkey god Hanuman. Men worshipping monkeys. No monkey worships a man. Even monkeys laugh about it. That what has happened to these people? And these people think that they have evolved from monkeys. Monkeys think just the opposite. They think these people have fallen. Of course, they have fallen from the trees. Literally, they have fallen. And is still worshipping monkey gods. All kinds of gods, all kinds of superstitions. Parents carry all these. When a child is born, he is a clean slate, tabula rasa. Nothing is written on him. That's his beauty. The mirror is without any dust. He can see more clearly. Mum, Jimmy, did you fall over with your new trousers on? Jimmy, yes, Mum. There was not time to take them off. The first grade teacher was talking to her class about nature, and she called it the world around you. She asked little Helen in the first row, "Now Helen, tell everyone in the class, are you vegetable, animal or mineral?" "I am not any of those," she replied promptly. "I am a real live girl." A little fellow who was fishing off the end of a pier lost his balance while trying to land a fish and fell in the lake. Several men who also were fishing nearby rushed to his aid and pulled him out. "How did you come to fall in?" one of the men asked him. "I didn't come to fall in," the kid said. "I came to fish." A large family was finally able to move into a more spacious home. Sometime later, an uncle asked his nephew, "How do you like your new house?" "Just fine," replied the lad. "My brother and I have our own rooms, and so do my sisters. But poor mom, she is still stuck in the same room with dad." A woman was almost panic-stricken as she called her long-time friend on the telephone. But the friend was in the bathroom and her young daughter took up the phone. "Ah, dear," she said, "I just have to talk to someone. I just found this note on my kitchen table. My husband has run off with another woman. Gone, gone, gone forever. I am so full of pent-up emotion. I don't know what to do. I am sure that any minute I will just let go." "That's the thing to do," the doctor said. "Just give in to emotions. Let yourself go. Nothing will do you any more good right now than a good laugh." Every child is born intelligent, clear, clean. But we start heaping rubbish on him. You ask me, does not a child have as much right to privacy and freedom from parental conditioning as the parents themselves expect, he has much more right than the parents, because he is beginning his life. The parents are already burdened. They are already crippled. They are already depending on crutches. He has more right to be his own self. He needs privacy. But parents don't allow him any privacy. They are very much afraid of the children's privacy. They are continuously poking their nose in the child's affairs. They want to have their say about everything. The child needs privacy. Because all that is beautiful grows in privacy. Remember it. It is one of the most fundamental laws of life. The roots grow underground. If you take them out of the ground, they start dying. They need privacy, absolute privacy. The child grows in the mother's womb, in darkness, in privacy. If you bring the child in the light, in the public, he will die. He needs 9 months absolute privacy. Everything that needs growth needs privacy. A grown-up person does not need so much privacy, because he is already grown up. But a child needs much more privacy. But he is not left alone at all. Parents are very much worried whenever they see that the child is missing or is alone. They immediately become concerned. They are afraid, because if the child is alone, he will start growing his individuality. He has to be kept always within limits, so the parents can go on watching, because their very watching does not allow his individuality to grow. Their watching covers him, envelops him with a personality. Personality is nothing but an envelope. It comes from a beautiful word, persona. Persona means a mask. In Greek dramas, the actors used masks. Sona means sound. Par means throw. They used to speak through the mask. You could not see their real face. You can only hear their voice. Hence the mask was called persona, because the sound was heard through it. And out of persona, the word personality. The child has to be continuously on guard, because he is being watched. You can see it yourself. If you are taking a bath, you are a totally different person. In your bathroom, you can put aside your mask. Even grown-up people who are very serious start singing, humming. Even grown-up people start making faces in the mirror. But because you are in privacy, you are perfectly aware that you have locked the door. But if you suddenly become aware that somebody is watching from the keyhole an immediate change will happen to you. You will become again serious, the song will disappear, you will not be making faces in the mirror. You will start behaving as you are supposed to behave. This is the personality. You are back into the envelope. A child needs immense privacy, as much as possible, maximum of privacy, so that he can grow his individuality uninterfered. But we are transgressing the child, continuously transgressing. The parents are continuously asking, what are you doing? What are you thinking? Even thinking. They have to look even in your mind. There are few tribes in the Far East where each child has to tell his dreams every morning to the parents, because even in the dreams he cannot be left alone. He may be dreaming wrong dreams, may be thinking of things which he should not think. The parents have to be reported. The early morning ritual is the first thing before the breakfast. He has to relate his dreams, what he has seen in the night. Psychoanalysis is very late development in the West, but in these far eastern tribes, psychoanalysis has been practiced by the parents for thousands of years. And of course, the poor child does not know the symbology. So he simply relates the dream as it is. He does not know what it means. Only the parents know. But this is going too far. It is encroaching. It is inhuman. It is overlapping somebody's space. Just because the child is dependent on you for food, for clothes, for shelter, do you think you have the right to do it? Because if the child says that he had seen in his dream that he was flying, the parents immediately know that that is a sexual dream. Now they will curb his behavior more. They will discipline him more. They will give him an early morning cold bath. They will teach him more about celibacy. And they will teach him that if you are not celibate, things will go wrong. If you think about sexuality, you will lose all intelligence, that you will go blind, and all kinds of nonsense. A child needs immense privacy. The parents should come only to help him, not to interfere. He should be allowed to do things or not to do things. Parents should be only alert that he does not do any harm to himself or to somebody else. That's enough. More than that is ugly. A tourist drove into a small town and spoke to a boy who was sitting on a bench in front of the post office. "How long have you lived here?" the tourist asked. "About 12 years," the boy replied. "It sure is an out-of-the-way place. isn't it? The tourists asked. It sure is, the boy said. There is not much going on, the tourist said. I don't see anything here to keep you busy. Neither do I, the boy said. That's why I like it. The children like it very much to be left alone. Spaciousness is needed for their growth. Yes, parents have to be alert, cautious, so that no harm happens to the child. But this is a negative kind of cautiousness. They are not to interfere positively. They have to give the child a great longing to inquire about truth, but they have not to give him an ideology that gives him the idea of truth. They should not teach him about truth. They should teach him how to inquire about truth. Inquiry should be taught. Investigation should be taught. Adventure should be taught. The children should be helped so that they can ask questions, and the parents should not answer those questions unless they really know. And even if they know, they should say it as Buddha used to say to his disciples, that don't believe in what I say. This is my experience. But the moment I say it to you, it becomes false, because to you it is not an experience. Listen to me, but don't believe. Experiment. Inquire. Search. Unless you know yourself, your knowledge is of no use. It is dangerous. A knowledge which is borrowed is a hindrance. But that's what parents go on doing. They go on conditioning the child. The children need privacy. They need freedom. They need freedom to be. But every parent is trying to make the child something else than he is. They are telling the child to become a Jesus Christ, or to become a Gautam Buddha, or to become a Mahavira, or a Zarathustra. And this is such an ignoble project, because nobody can become a Buddha again. Nobody can become a Jesus again. Existence is so creative, it never repeats itself. 2,000 years have passed since Jesus. Has anybody become a Jesus again? That is not possible. That is not allowed. And it is good that it is not possible. Twenty-five centuries have passed since Buddha, and millions of people have tried, imitated to be Buddhas, but nobody has succeeded. It is good that nobody succeeds, because everybody has his own uniqueness. Imitation is destroying yourself. It is suicidal. But all the parents are teaching the children some suicidal thing. Become somebody. Somebody else. Become anybody, but don't become yourself. The child is condemned, rejected in every possible way, told directly, indirectly, that Whatsoever you are is not right. Whatsoever you are doing is not right. You have to be following some example, some ideals. Unless you behave like Buddha, Mahavira, Confucius, Moses, you are not right. And the child starts imitating. And this world is full of imitators. That's why there is so much misery. That's why there is so much uncreativity and so much insensitivity, so much ugliness. It is like telling the roses to become marigolds and telling the marigolds to become lotuses. Neither the rose can become a marigold, nor the marigold can become a lotus. Only one thing is possible. If the lotus gets the idea of becoming a rose, and the rose gets the idea of becoming a marigold, and marigold is conditioned to become a lotus, there will be no more lotuses, no more marigolds, no more roses. Because the whole energy of the rose will be wasted in becoming a marigold, which the rose cannot become, which is not possible. And because it cannot become the marigold, its energy is wasted. The same energy which would have blossomed like a rose. No conditioning is needed on the children. No direction has to be given to them. They have to be helped to be themselves. They have to be supported, nourished, strengthened. A real father, a real mother, the real parents will be a blessing to the child. The child will feel helped by them, so he becomes more rooted in his nature, more grounded, more centered. So that he starts loving himself rather than feeling guilty about himself. So that he respects himself. Remember, unless a person loves himself, he cannot love anybody else in the world. Unless a child respects himself, he cannot respect anybody else. That's why your all love is bogus and your all respect is pseudo, phony. You don't respect yourself, how can you respect anybody else? Unless love for yourself is born within your being, it will not radiate to others. First, you have to become a light unto yourself, then your light will spread, will reach to others. It was examination day at a school, and a bad-tempered teacher was questioning a small boy about his knowledge of plants and flowers. The boy was unable to answer any question correctly. In frustration, the teacher turned to his assistant and shouted, "Go and bring me a handful of hay." As the assistant turned to go out, the small boy cried, "And for me, just a small coffee, please." A bullock was driving along a country road when his car broke down. While he was fixing it, a small boy approached and asked, "What is that?" "It is a jack," said the bullock. "My father has two of those," said the boy. Then a minute later he asked again, "And what is that?" "That's a torch." "Ah, my father has two of those too," And over there, is that a spanner? Yes, said the man irritably. My father has two of those. The conversation went on in this vein for some time. Finally, the repair was finished and the Polak got up and went to piss at the side of the road. As he was pissing, he pointed to his reproductive machinery and asked, does your father have two of these too? Of course not, said the boy, but he has one that is twice as long. The children are immensely intelligent. Just they need a chance. They need opportunities to grow. The right climate. Every child is born with the potential of enlightenment, with the potential of becoming awakened. But we destroy. This has been the greatest calamity in the whole history of man. No other slavery has been so bad as the slavery of the child. And no other slavery has taken so much juice out of humanity as the slavery of the child. And also, this is going to be the most difficult task for humanity to get rid of. Unless we arrange the whole society in a totally different way, unless a radical change happens, and the family disappears and gives place to a commune, it is not possible. The parental institution has become so deep-rooted in its structure that unless the whole pattern is destroyed and replaced by a totally new phenomenon, I call the commune. A commune is where many people live together collectively, not in single family units. For example, this commune, now near about 3,000 sannyasins are living here. 1,500 sannyasins are working in the commune. There are many children. These children are being loved by everybody. They are not focused only on their parents. They are enjoying immense freedom. They go and they visit other sannyasins. They remain with other sannyasins for days together. They have many uncles, many aunts. Little Siddhartha has so many friends from small children to grown-up people, to very old people, all ages, all kinds of friends. Her mother, Nidicha, has changed many lovers, but every lover becomes an uncle to Siddhartha. It is a gain for him, because each time Nidicha changes the lover, Siddhartha gains one more uncle. Nirja's love affair may come and go, but Siddhartha's love affair remains. Even ex-boyfriends of Nirja are still friends with Siddhartha. He goes on asking them. Whenever he needs money, he goes. And he gets money from everywhere. He is the richest person in the commune. he comes to sattva every day. And sattva has to give him 5 rupees. That's fixed amount. One day sattva has no money. So sattva said, today, Siddhartha, I'm sorry, I have got no money. He said, why didn't you ask me? And after 10 minutes, he came with 5 rupees and gave to sattva. He said, I have so many friends, whenever you need money, you can ask me. I can find it from anywhere. In a commune, a child will not be obsessed with the parents. He will have more freedom, more liquidity. He will be more open to many people, many varieties. He will learn more. He will become multidimensional. He will become multilingual. And the most important thing will be that he will not be conditioned by anybody, because when there are so many people with so many different backgrounds, he will be able to learn this, that my mother's or my father's religion is not the only religion, that my mother's country is not the only country, that my mother's language is not the only language, that there are many languages and they are all beautiful, and there are many religions and they are all beautiful, and there are many countries and they are all beautiful. She will have a more universal approach towards things. She will remain liquid, flowing. He will not become fixated. And psychologists say that each child becomes fixated. If the child is a boy, he becomes fixated on the mother figure. If the child is a girl, the child becomes fixated on the father figure. And this is one of the problems in life. Because once a boy has become fixated on the mother figure, his whole life he will be searching a woman who fits exactly like the mother. He will be expecting his mother's qualities from his beloved, which is not possible. Where he can find his mother? Each woman will have her own way. And the woman will be there not to be his mother. And the strange thing is, the woman will be searching for the father. And the man is searching for the mother. And the woman is searching for the father. And both are pretending to be lovers. Hence all marriages fail. Hence no love affair succeeds. For the simple reason, because of these obsessions, there is a criterion how a really good woman should be, or how a really good man should be. If a child moves with many people, he will not have a fixed figure of a woman or a man. He will not have an imprint. That's what psychologists call. And without any imprint, he will have just a vague idea of a woman. He will have more or less the idea of womanhood, not of a woman. And she will have the idea of manhood, not of a particular man. And then life can have a totally different flavor. Then you are not searching for the mother, not searching for the father. Then love affairs can bring immense joy. Right now they only bring miseries and nightmares. And if we can make children liquid, flowing, the countries can disappear sooner or later. The family is the unit of the nation, of the state, of the church. Hence the church, the state and the nation all will defend the family. They are not concerned with the misery of humanity. I am against the nation, against the church, against the state. Hence, I am in favor of commune, not in favor of family. Once this old pattern of family disappears into a more multidimensional setup, humanity can have a new birth. A new man is needed, and the new man will bring the very paradise that in the past we have been hoping in some other life. The paradise can be here now, but we have to bring a new child. My sannyasins at least have to understand it very clearly. If you can be helpful in bringing the child to his uniqueness, you will be helping humanity immensely. You will become the harbingers of a new dawn, of a new sunrise. The second question. What do you say about modern art? I don't know much about modern art. And I don't want to know much about either. It is not much art. In the past, art had a totally different quality. It was beautiful. The modern art is ugly. It is very rare to find something beautiful in the modern art. And I can see the reason. The modern mind is boiling with repressed sexuality, anger, hatred, violence. Centuries of repression has become accumulated. It has come to a crescendo and it is erupting. The volcano is erupting. Modern art is more like a catharsis. More like vomiting. It is not art. Just one wants to get rid of all kinds of poisons that have become accumulated. The same is true about all dimensions of art. Music, poetry, painting, sculpture. They all have become ugly. The modern man is suffering, is in immense misery and hell, and that is sown in the modern art. Modern art is a reflection. Art is always a reflection. It is a mirror, because the artist is the most sensitive person in the society. Hence, he becomes first aware of what is happening. Others take a longer time to become aware. The poet is the most prophetic because he becomes aware of things which are going to happen. He becomes aware a little ahead of time. Hence he is never understood. Modern art is psychotic. It reflects humanity. It shows that something has gone wrong, very wrong. Man is falling apart. And modern art is a representative art. In a way, it is very realistic. It is not creating a dream world, a fantasy. But it has lost the artistic touch. Amrito, just as modern man needs a new birth, modern art also needs a new birth. But that is a secondary phenomenon. Unless a new man arrives on the earth, a new art cannot arrive. A new poetry cannot be born. Modern art is becoming more and more ridiculous. Just the other day I was reading this story. Jack Mazeltov was walking along Fifth Avenue when he bumped into an old friend whom he had not seen for 20 years. Joe Pasternak, my God, you have not changed a bit. Am I glad to see you? Tell me, what are you doing? Well, smiled Joe, I am an artist. As a matter of fact, I have done very well. I have got a picture hanging in the Modern Museum, right here off Fifth Avenue. You don't say, exclaimed Jack. Gee, that's marvelous. Say, we are not far from there. Could you take me over and show the picture to me? With pleasure, said Joe. And they strolled over to the Modern Museum. There on the wall, Joe pointed to his picture. It was brown all over, almost a solid monochrome, with only a deep patch of darker brown in the lower right-hand corner. Jack looked at it quizzically for a few minutes, but got nothing out of it. He turned to his pal Joe and said, what is this picture supposed to represent? Well, said Joe, it is modern art. The name of the picture is A Cow in a Field. A cow in a field? My God, Joe, what do I mean? A cow in a field? I don't see any field there. A field is green. Where is the green? Joe explained patiently, well, you see, in modern art, it does not go quite that way. The cow walked into the field and she ate up the grass, so now the grass is all gone. There is no more green, there is only brown. Okay, said Jake, so where is the cow? Well, the cow, she ate up the grass already, so of course, she just went on, that's all. I said, Jack, now I understand. There is no green because there is no grass. There is no cow because the cow went away. But there is a big patch of brown in the right-hand corner. Now what is that? Ah, well, you have got to understand. This is modern art, said Joe. A cow eats up a whole field of green grass and she walks on, but on the way out, what do you think she does? That's what the modern art is. Enough for today.